So before I ask the question that I want to ask from the parasha, just a small matter of halacha that we're now in the Bein HaMetzorim, 3 weeks halacha, because there's a little bit of halacha that always troubles me, the way it's set out in Sifrei Halacha, which is it's the halacha that during 3 weeks and during the 9 days even more so, we don't for choice commence legal proceedings. We don't put ourselves in a position where there's potential for damage or loss or whatever. And the Sifrei Halacha, a common theme is this is an unlucky time, but this is a Zman Muchen Leperonius. It's not a propitious time. It's not an auspicious time. And the problem with that is massively superstitious. And we are Ein Mazal Yisrael. We are not governed by the mazalis, by the constellations. We make our own relationship with the Rabbeinu Shloim. We have a Hashgacha Protis relationship with the Rabbeinu Shloim. And we don't expect to be told that this time is good for this or this place is good for something else. That's not how we behave. So what does it mean when we say that this time is not an auspicious time? So I said Sunday particularly about starting legal proceedings. It struck me that we start the Beit HaMetzorim with a Ta'anis. We start with the Shavasa B'Tammuz, and on a Ta'anis, we all say the Shlosh Esrei Midos. We say the characteristics of the Rabbeinu Shalom in Slichas. It's something that some people, Hasidim, say every day. Many Sephardim say it every day. Also in Vidoy, after Vidoy, it's Israel. It's not a minhag Eretz Yisrael. I can assure you there are Ashkenazi communities in Israel who do not say Vidoy every day, because I belong to one. So you're thinking of those that have been infiltrated by the Americans who want to rebuild the Chorban and charge money for entrance. Right, because they don't say Vidoy there. No. Okay, it's not horrible. Okay. Oh dear, poor fellow. Right. You are right. We're going to end up with all sorts of interesting facts. Well, nobody can see who it is. It's somebody. Someone's ill. You are right. I'm going to have to get Sharon to pare this down a bit before she loads it. But that's right. No, we'll do that. But. But no, it's not. It's not a minigate. It's rather plenty of a shul that davens nusach Ashkenaz minag Poilin in Eretz Yisrael, which there aren't very many of them. But it's not those that do it the same here. So there's no Hashem Hashem. But on Slichas we say Hashem Hashem. So I think the issue is this. We know that the 3 weeks are about recalibrating our performance. They're about reassessing our performance. And one thing that they are doing is they are about teshuva. They're not the, it's not the 9 days, excuse me, it's not the Aseres Metshuva, but this is a time for Klal Yisrael. The Aseres Metshuva is a time of teshuva as individuals. But this is a time of tshuva as a nation. This is confronting our behavior and looking back and saying, we ought to be doing better. So in terms of in terms of teshuvah, it seems to me that the message of starting with the midis, Hashem, Hashem, keil rachum lachan, and we say Hashem's erech apayim, he's slow to anger, and the nakei, and he overlooks things, he cleanses the slate. It's not consistent with at the same time getting out my book, my logbook, to see who owes me money and setting out to this is not the right time to be doing that. So, and the halacha is very clear. If somebody asked me on Sunday after I said this, if the limitation period is running out, and if you don't sue now, you won't, then you can sue it, the dovah harvad, you can get on with it. But this is not the time. I want to be approaching the Rabbeinu Shloim, asking him, kiviyochel, to be forbearing with us. This is not the best time to be going around looking for old grudges and settling scores. So I think this is. I think you can look at all the halachos of the 3 weeks in that vein, and when you do, some of the things that I've said in the past about the getting the balance right, and why this is very different from the Omer, I think begin to fall into place. So, as you know, I've said on many an occasion that I always get very worried about children's school holidays in this country, because they go through the whole year. Can we go swimming? Can we go this? Can we go? No, because you've got school. Suddenly, you've got 4 weeks off, whatever it is. Oh, so we can go swimming. No, it's the 3 weeks. It's a big issue, this. It's a very big issue. I think I already told you about what I said to someone about this who's sitting shiva. I think I did tell you. Maybe it's I went to a family, to a parent who young children, but he just lost his parent, and he's sitting shiva. And I don't know, I just you want to talk, say something. So I said, I hope you're not going to change your plans for the children, because he's got young children, for your children's summer holiday this year. So he says, well, we're discussing it in the family, because we need to be where there's a minion now. We could only choose. And I said, I've never understood this. I think saying Kaddish every day for your parents, this is a kibbutz. It's an honor. It's respecting the honor. It's meant to be respecting the honor of the parents, of your parents. It was these children's grandparents. So show me the grandparents who would find it a covered to have his or her grandchildren's summer holiday ruined on their account. Chas v'shalom, the children should start by resenting. Chas v'shalom, they should start by resenting the fact they can't go swimming, they can't go to wherever they would have normally gone, because daddy's got to be within 5 minutes of a minion. It's an appalling way to be mechabed. So I said, what you need to do is you need to talk to the children about the concept of kaddish, the concept of kovod, and you make a proper arrangement with a moysud, with a kodel, a yeshiva, or somewhere. Make a proper nice arrangement with them, not just not derech harai, a proper arrangement where you make a nice donation and somebody properly does it with a kovod, like you would tell the rabbi who doesn't maybe know the nifter at a stone set, at a levaya, a stone setting. You give them some information. So you do it the same here. You give them some information. This is who you're saying kaddish for. You take it properly. They take it seriously. And that's the biggest kovod that the grandmas have. Chas v'shalom, to ruin the children's summer holiday. How is that a kovod? You don't look convinced. You don't look convinced. No, but because a grandparent, because a grandparent died. So you're right. You're right. That you got to get this right. It can go wrong in either direction. So if the children learn that, yes, you should be saying Kaddish, but it's the summer holiday, so we're not going to bother. And I'll have a word with somebody, and they might say, or they'll say Kaddish. If it feels casual, I agree that that's also not a good limit. I agree. But if you sit, if it's done in a serious way, and the message the children will be learning is the most important lesson in halacha that there is, which, by the way, is taking us pretty close back to the parasha. We're not far away. The strongest lesson that the children can ever learn in halacha is that everything has, as the Brisker says, tzedinin. Right? There's two sides to every coin, and here. Yeah, there's a halacha of kibud of va'aim. Of course, there's a halacha of kibud of va'aim for the aveilim. Of course, there's a, but there's also an important. There's shalom bayis. Shalom bayis doesn't just mean to the wife. It's shalom bayis, as you say, for the children as well. That they shouldn't chas v'shalom. And what you're teaching them here, and a two-year-old. Is old enough to sit down and discuss or hear about this. No child is too young to watch that the parents are making a cheshbon. And that's what matters. The parents are making a calculation on how to weigh up all the different issues involved. And that's what we want to teach our children. So I agree with you. They'll say, well, we shouldn't go, but we will, it doesn't matter. Of course that's about it. Fine. Okay. So since Graham's being filmed, he's suddenly become a great. He's now got to be the great Kabbalist. Suddenly, there's no longer the rationalist. He's now we're seeing the Kabbalist side of Graham. Fine. So if you tell me something metaphysical about Kaddish, that it's an aliyah for the neshama in some metaphysical way, yep, then it certainly doesn't matter who says it. Who's that to, me or him? Who's it? You know because any God who says that the neshama will only get an aliyah if the Son says it is taking us right back into the Arkadius Yitzchok theory. Yes, any God who says I will give an aliyah to the neshama, but only if the child says it. Is not a God I want any part of, or you either. Because what's going to happen, so he didn't have somebody to say Kaddish for him. Oh, since so Neshama doesn't get an aliyah. What nonsense is that? Oh, so God makes up for him then. He has a little malach in the corner who says Kaddish for you. All right. And if he has a son who can't say Kaddish because he can't physically get to shul, or you can't find a minion. So does the Rabbi Shlomo make up for that? Yeah, well, there we are. Right, you take the point. And therefore, this... What? No, because you get the point. Go on, then. you see the point. If he couldn't do it physically, if he hasn't got a son, or the son can't get there, you agree. It can't be that, therefore, the neshama loses out. That would be nonsense. Correct, and that's what you've said already, and I've dealt with that, of course. And but not about the metaphysics. I'm not into the metaphysics because nobody knows them. We don't know the metaphysics. The genuineness determines the limit as well. If it's not done, and that's why I said to write out a piece. You can imagine the power of this. Imagine sitting down with a child and saying, "I want you to help me write out a little paragraph about." Zaidi, whoever it is right, or Sabta, whoever it is gone. Because we're going on a holiday next week, so I won't be able to get to a minion, so I need to give this to somebody who's going to say Kaddish for. That's an amazing, I mean, that's a beautiful, that sort of thing could last as a memory, and much better than the memory, oh, that was the year I couldn't go swimming because Zaidi died. Yeah? There's a story about Rav Steinman. It's a very, very, very nice, the art scroll biography of Rav Steinman is very, very, very beautifully. It's written very, very nicely. It's been done very nicely. And the editorial policies of earlier art scrolls have clearly been varied quite considerably. Apart from anything, the photographer seems to have used a camera that's capable of capturing women as well as men, which is, I know. So we're doing very well. That's right. So we're doing very well. And there's a beautiful, there's some lovely stories in it. And there's a beautiful story, where he turns up to shul. He has yacht site for one of his parents, and someone else in the shul also has a yacht site. And Rav Steinman says, okay, you go to the Omad. And so Rav Steinman's, I think one of his children or grandchildren, one of his family says to him, but you know, I can understand this isn't, you know, you don't push yourself forward, but don't you want to show kovod to your, you know, your, this is about you showing kovod to whoever it was, his father, his mother, whichever it was. And Steinman's answer is, I cannot think of any greater kovod for my father or my mother, whichever it was, than for me to be mavate, for me to stand back and not stand on my, not stand on my rights. So it's a question of how you do these things. Of course, why should I go to the Omad? I don't care about it. No, that's a bad thing. When a meta, and I take the point. It's, you know, as we've always said, there's rationalist approach, there's a metaphysical approach, and both have their place. But whichever it is, it's got to be done with a sense of balancing up all the issues. And being mavata is also a zuchus. So I think the point here is that the halachas of the 3 weeks, in exactly the same way, they require to be weighed up. And what you want the children to be approaching it in a spirit of self-examination, and not in a spirit of, you say, just unreasoning resentment of, yeah, this, we've waited all this. So there are ways and ways of doing it. So the issue, like in Purim, when it comes to Purim, mishenichnas odor marbim besimcha. The aim is there should be a gradation, build up with more simcha, and you should feel you're working up to a climactic point of simcha at the Purim Suddah. So the same is here. We should be mishenichnas av, but it's even before then. In our case, we start from Shivasa B'Tammuz. We should start being mamad simcha, and the children should fix for themselves things that they feel are appropriate miyute simcha. They're appropriate ways of being a bit less than they would otherwise have done. And whatever they feel is right, they are then being mekayim, the requirement to remember the chorban, the old one that hasn't been rebuilt yet. he's not commenting because he's on the video. So there was a bit zeichel chorban, and they're fixing it for themselves is what they think is appropriate. You weren't here. I think you were away, Anna, because I gave the last we had quite a strong go on the rebuilding of the Chorban synagogue. I beg your pardon. I'm sorry. That's right. For some reason I thought you weren't here. Probably I thought I'd have let you off. You had been here. I wouldn't have been. Yeah, so we've discussed that. Okay, not for now. Beseder. That's all right. I don't mind being misguided. I've made a professional. It's fine. Right. So the question, that's 3 weeks. And it's about seeing both sides of the story, seeing the point of what's going on, understanding the essence of Zechiras Chorban, understanding the essence of Teshuvah, understanding the essence of contrition, and not Chas v'Shalom turning it into a superstition. It's not lucky to sue now, which is, again, that's really true. You know, you talk about trivializing. That's trivializing religion. Very nice. Very good. So you see, again, this all right. So I am at the natural point to take us back in, but just briefly on this. This is an issue where we do have to have some cultural and the halacha is culturally sensitive. So washing in the 9 days, right now, where again, if you read Sifrei Halacha from anything up to a couple of hundred years ago, you know, Kitzur, it will just say you don't wash, you don't have a shower, you change your shirt, right? And again, as you know, I don't come here to say matters of halacha. No, far be it from me to say a matter of halacha here. But I mean, that's bonkers today. In today's world, unless you sit in a room, nobody by for the next 9 days, it's just not what we do. Right, and basic social hygiene is permitted. The Horaya on Tisha B'Av itself, basic normal social hygiene is not permitted. Right, social hygiene is: you come out the toilet, you wash your hands with soap, the same you would any other time. But basic social hygiene is interfered with on Tisha B'Av itself. Therefore, the rest of the time it ain't. And when Sifrei Halacha say, you don't wash, you don't do this, you don't wash that, it's because they weren't doing it every day in any event. So you don't have to choose, right, when shall I have my once a fortnight hot bath or whatever it was. You don't have to choose to do it in the 9 days. So you don't do it during the 9 days. When shall I wash my shirt, which we wash, however often it was, not during the 9 days. Today, you put on a clean shirt. People put on a clean shirt every day. So it's not, there's, and again, back to my point, what is prohibited during the 3 weeks? It's to be Mayat Simcha. So it's, for example, it's Binyan Shel Simcha. It's Natiya Shel Simcha, planting something for fun, building something for fun, and washing the shirt. You say, oh, I'm going to feel so good because today I wash my shirt. So I go, but that doesn't apply to us now, because what don't you do? You don't save up your dry cleaning to do during the 9 days, right? And if you do your dry cleaning every 2 weeks, whatever, you take your suit in every day, you don't do it that you can put it off an extra couple of days, an extra few days. So to that extent, things have changed radically. And the people who still, there are people who put on, you know, they here's a good example of trivializing. Here's a good example for you on the metaphysics. There are people who, they want to wear a clean shirt every day because that's what we do, but they're still reading their old Sifrei Halacha, which say you don't. So what do? Erev Reish Chodesh Av, they put on quickly and take off, right, a whole load of shirt. Your mouth hanging open. You've not heard of this? You've heard of it. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, there are people who do it. And that is the ultimate trivialization of religion. That's the idea. That's the metaphysics. Oh, well, there's some metaphysical problem. No, it's nonsense. There's no metaphysics. It's about social hygiene. It's halacha about social hygiene and diminishing extras during the 9 days. So it's not an extra. So yeah, anybody who can do that has already got such a weird, it's like I always say about music. I said they bring out these tapes, you know, they bring out these a cappella tapes for during the Omer and also during the 3 weeks, so you can play them because they don't have the instrumentals. But it sounds exactly the same. It sounds exactly the same. So I say that works. I always say this every year. I say it works if you think that God is very stupid. If your perception of God is not just metaphysical but totally bonkers, so that he cares if there's a trumpet in the background, but if there's a person making a trumpet noise, he doesn't care. Fine, gesundheit, but that's not a religion I want to have anything to do with, because it's so trivial that it ends up not being able to make appropriate spiritual choices. And again, back to my point about the children that you sit with and you say, this is, you're teaching them to make appropriate spiritual choices, rather than even if they wouldn't resent not, but I want them to think about their halacha. I want them to think about the choices and not just to. So haircuts the same. If a person that you're going, he's going somewhere special, she's going somewhere special, and you would normally have a haircut. For example, the garden parties are normally the Buckingham Palace garden parties are normally during the 3 weeks. Ours was even during the 9 days. And I said to Rabbi Cooper, you know, what does Rabbi Cooper think we should do? And Rabbi Cooper said, first he said, you're not going out, you don't go to have fun, which is absolutely right. I only went because Julia wanted to go. So you go, this is a Sholem bias issue. We went the year, and I can prove this, if there's any doubt. What was the year we went? We went the year that Julia found out that every year I'd been turning down an invitation that she didn't know about. So when you found out, so it's Sholem bias. Finally found it, we got the invitation, so we went. And it was music. So you're not choosing the music. You're not for fun, it's music. And you go, and of course you dress appropriately. So if the lady wants to have her hair done, the man wants to have your hair done, then of course you do what's necessary. But do you choose to have an extra egg? I know what I would make me feel good. I have an extra bath or an extra egg. No, that you don't do because we're being mamayat simcha. Okay? Right. Correct. So this is also about shaving in the Omer, shaving in the 3 weeks. It's not done. People don't want to turn up to work. Yeah. And it's not necessary. So again, it's like shaving during the Omer. It's not a big deal. Someone's going to work, and they're going to work, they must look appropriate for work. I'll tell you who I gave a little tour of Westminster this week to a visiting Israeli. He's the senior lawyer in one of the legal departments in Israel. And he and his wife came for various reasons. They were in touch with me and I took him around. Now, he is the grandson. So you will immediately, probably some of you will know the family. I found out he is the grandson of Reverend Harden. I got the impression they don't have much family still here. There were two children. It doesn't matter. But so I said to them, obviously Reverend Harden is very, very famous, and they'll have heard, I said, I'll tell you something from my perspective that not everybody will tell you. Because it was very, because when Julia and I got married, we lived around the corner from Raleigh Close, and we went for the first 2-3 years, we dabbled in Raleigh Close, and Reverend Harman's still there. Now, he was old school, if you like, really old school, very old school. And in the street, if he didn't have a hat on, he certainly didn't have a kippah on. He was very, it was just during the week, and he would not, he did not go with tzitzis outside or any. It was very non-ostentatious. It was the old style. And many, many of that generation, I would say most of that generation, who believed in being, you blend in and you're not ostentatious. Most of that generation, in my experience, were very thoroughly suspicious of these youngsters are coming along with their tzitzis outside, and they got to wear a couple everywhere. Suddenly what was good enough for us isn't good enough for them. And Reverend Hardman absolutely stood out as somebody who did not feel like that. He was tolerance normally means I'm tolerant of everybody who does what I do or less. But anyone who dares to do more, he has their own ideas. Suddenly I'm not. He was a genuinely tolerant person, and more than that, he saw that times were changing. That sounds obvious, but it's actually quite a rare middle. And I said this to grandson, and I benefited from this because I went in to Raleigh Close and we davened there, and I looked a little bit more ostentatious than they were accustomed to. My Shabbos hat wasn't exactly what they were accustomed to. And he was very, very, very welcome, very welcoming, and went out of his way to show that we shouldn't feel embarrassed about doing things our way, and that the old order, you know, was not necessarily where everything has to be forever. So I was very grateful to him for that. You're looking thoughtful. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. No, I think it's completely different, really. but it's the same about tolerance. It's tolerance from the opposite end. The truth is, it's not difficult to be tolerant of people who you feel are somehow less observant. That's not difficult. Yeah. It's much more difficult to be tolerant of people who you feel are perhaps a bit more. Oh yeah. Well. Well, because you don't buy the Hamodia, you see. Then you'd see the Kretchen of the Rebbe's all the time. Yeah, you'd see them all the time. No. Well, that's right. Good. You have to buy the women only supplement. No, it isn't. Now, let me ask you a question. The question is, and we have discussed this before, but I gave you a different answer last time. The question is, and it's discussed in a number of places, if you're going to have a parsha named after Pinchas, right, then the question is, why do you start it after the whole story's over? The obvious place to start, particularly because generally the name of the parsha we'd like to take from the significant word of the first verse. If the first whole verse is Vayadabar Hashem Emor Shelemo or something. Yeah, if there's nothing to choose from. But it's the first standout word. So the parsha should have started. With Mafti, what? It should have started Vaya Pinchas ben Elozar ben Aaron Akaya. That's when Parshas Pinchas should have started. And it's not that somehow that would have made less sense in terms of dividing up the story, because of the story again. Yeah, we get half the story. So I mean, it's almost, you know, it's a very strange place to break it up. One. Yeah, so the Parshios is, I don't know if it's the Anshe Knesset HaGedolah or earlier, but or later, I don't know, I'm not a historian, but they are us, they are the rabbis. Not like the chapters, which, as we know, even I, not being a historian, know that the chapters were not a rabbinic. They were ecclesiastical, the chapters. What? Yeah, ecclesiastical. I do. But I'm tolerant for people who are less posh than me. I'm just not tolerant of people who are more posh than me. Right. I do remember, I did want to say this, because I was really delighted to be taking his grandson around, and I did want to say it because I do remember it. It really stood out at the time. This is somebody, he was real Avis Habrius. He accepted people for exactly on their own terms, and not by measuring how far they were away from his terms. It was a very, very impressive on that score. And as I say, I benefited from it. It was like things that I used to daven for the Omud there. So I don't like to repeat words in the Nusach. So I'll do some tunes that would traditionally, I find a way of doing them without repeating words. So a lot of people were very sniffy about that. Oh, you know, that's not how. And Harm was very supportive. No, that's how he wants to do it. Not, and again, you have to. It doesn't work if you go and say everybody else is wrong, and repeating words is the worst thing in the world. And you know, it's not the worst thing in the world, but it can move on a bit. Things can move on. So, the answer is as follows. What did the three bits of the story that happened? There are two bits in last week's parsha and one bit in this week's parsha. Last week's, if we start, Simon, from the beginning of Chof Hay. And I suppose it's interesting. It's a timely reminder that when the rabbis were dividing up the parashiyos, what they were not looking for was the logical breaks in the story. They're looking for limudim, for lessons to us. So you're right. The chapter, the story starts at the beginning of the chapter of Chof Hay. They're going wrong. There's beginning to be an avodah zarah in the camp. And they're starting to call to call to the people to make zvachim, sacrifices to these idols, and the people came, the nation was starting to eat these sacrifices and to bow down to these idols. And Vayicha Af Hashem, and I mean, Graham will not thank us in his present metaphysical Kabbalistic mood. He will not thank us for it's because he doesn't want, he knows that people are going to be watching him. So he wants to, there's a spotlight on, but exactly. But again, however metaphysical wants to be, Vayicha Av Hashem's angry, we want to take some limud from it. It's got to mean something too. So what does it mean? So those of us who are anyway more on a rationalist side, look at Af Hashem as being division. It's about division. You translate it angry, anger, Simon. My point is, what does it mean? It's about a breakdown in relationship. It's about, you know, when the child and the parents, when there's an anger between, there's a distance. That's what it's a gap. It's a gap between them, and the close. So Vayicha Av Hashem, this causes, and I think the idea of the emotion behind it, the angriness behind it, is that it's a gap that starts to become self-perpetuating and self-accelerating, actually. And avodah zarah, idolatry, it very quickly, it's encouraging people to superstition, it is a superstition, obviously, and it's very quickly encouraging people away from thinking about core values. You as soon as you start to believe that if I hang this amulet in my car, then I won't have a traffic accident, you can drive like a mishugana because I've got an amulet in my car. Even better, it'll distract me, so you're more likely to have an accident. But it's taking people's mind away from the values. So here, So the you want to be reminded in a car. The way to remind a person in a car is to have tefillas haderecha. To have this prayer with these, no, I don't believe this is nonsense. Somebody says it reminds me to drive carefully, that I have a thing that says this malach will protect you. Rubbish. If the malach's protecting me, I don't drive so carefully. The malach is. Yeah. So if they believe that it protects them, this is avodah zarah mamash. This is avodah zarah mamash. If you're telling me somebody puts up this amulet and they don't think anything about the malach and they don't even know about the malach, it to them it's a reminder to drive carefully. Okay, but say that. I hear that. I mean, it's as I say, it's not a logical reminder. Logically, it's the reverse. But if somebody's that, I believe that's fine. But this protects me is avodah zarah mamash. This thing that you hang in your car does not protect you. Ein lono amili shon elu al avinishu shemaim, and somebody who thinks a little thing in the car will help him, this is avodah zarah mamash. That's right. But this is, but no, I'm being very, as a concession in Graham's presence, when he wants a Hashgacha Pratis story, I'll tell a Hashgacha Pratis story that happened to us in our family. And I'm a great believer in not telling these things outside, you know, great circle, but yeah, this is an invited audience. It's you and anybody who downloads. The point is, anybody who downloads, it's all family. It's all family. But my point is, these things one doesn't. Anyway, you'll see why I'm saying it. But the it's like these stories about Hatzolas. It should be used carefully. But I'll tell you this. We once had a very bad traffic accident on the way back. From holiday from Wales, I think we were, and we were on the North Circular Road coming past Brent Cross, and there's the down the flyover, there's the thing where they join, and there was a car was just a little over the line, so I was going past them very cautiously because they were a little over the line, so I slowed a lot, and a rubbish lorry went smack into the back. And we were in a car in the we had the car, and there was three rows of seats. So my son Yisrael, his head was literally, you know, an inch from the, it's in the back seat, so it's straight, right? And I mean, he had glass in his hair. Because the thing, it smashed into, it had glass in his hair. But we all walked away, which is absolutely, now, Why is that Hashgacha Pratis story? I normally say Tfilas HaDerech, when we're going on a journey, I normally say Tfilas HaDerech in Shacharis in Davening. And then I don't repeat it in the car or on the plane. I didn't say it that morning. I forgot to say it in Shacharis that morning. We got in the car, I remembered I hadn't said it, and I took a tefillah sadech out of my pocket and I handed it to Yisrael at the back. I said, "So you, which I've never done before in my life or since." So Yisrael, you say tefillah sadech for us. So he said tefillah sadech for us, and he was the one who was at the back of that car being smashed into. Now, I think that hits the right side, Eve. That reminds me that Tfilas HaDerech is about, it's about constantly thinking about how we invoke divine protection. It's a very much, Tfilas HaDerech is not about malochim, it's about thinking, I've got a car full of children here, I've got my wife and I have my children, and we have to drive in a way that shows an understanding of the care that we show. So I did the right thing. In Hishtadlis, I slowed down a lot. The fellow behind me didn't. And Baruch Hashem, I mean, the car was a write-off. The car was a write-off, and we were at home for Shabbos. We were home. The ambulance, they called an ambulance, and Baruch Hashem, the ambulance assessed them all and drove them home simply as a favor. Baruch Hashem didn't take them into the... So, but Malochim is not, this is Avodah Zorah. So they had Avodah Zorah. Vayom Hashem and Moshe kachel es kol roshe ha'om. We'd better set up a tikkun here. We've got to, I'll tell you about that next time, the tikkun program. Yitz Hashem, neighbor. Vayom Moshe shayte Yisrael. Hirgu ish anoshuv anitzmodim leval pe'oir. And Moshe Rabbeinu tells the judges what to do. It's interesting because the shoftim, the judges, their job is normally to determine disputes. Shoftim v'shoitrim, they're not rabbis. They're not the shoftim are not proactive religious leaders. They are reactive religious decision makers. That's shoftim. But it says here, so the death penalty. And a person comes along, and right in the face of Moshe Rabbeinu, in the face of the camp, he indulges in this unpleasant avodah zorah that is also an offense to decency, to decent behavior. And what happens? V'heima boichim. And they're all crying. Who's crying? This is Moshe Rabbeinu and the judges. And what does it say? It says Rashi, nis'almo mimenu halacha. They forgot the halacha. Or that it was hidden from them. Moshe Rabbeinu has just said the halacha. He's just said, but half a second later, Nis Alma Menu Alocha. And they were crying. Now, the rabbis discuss this, and one of the answers given, one of the explanations given, is that Moshe Rabbeinu was either being reminded by others, or he reminded himself, that in the matter of intermarriage, which is what this Avodah Zorah, well, it wasn't intermarriage, it was interbehavior, as it were. He himself was Noigebadov, he had a reason to be lenient, if you like, and that made him doubt his judgment. Okay, now, one can, you know, that's not necessarily incredibly compelling because, as I say, a moment before he was very clear what the judgment was. But let's put that aside for a moment. Let's call that chunk number one of the story. Chunk number two comes now, and this is where we would logically expect to start. Parshas Pinchos, Vayar Pinchos ben Elozer ben Aaron HaKoyen, Vayokim Mitoich HaEdo, Vayikach Remach VeYodoi, Vayovo Yacha Ish Yisrael LaKubo, Vayidko Yisneim, Es Ish Yisrael Ves Yisrael Kavoso, Vatayotza hamageifa me'al b'nei Yisrael, vayihu hameisim hamageifa arbo v'esrim olam. Pinchos vayar Pinchos. I didn't say what he saw. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, ro ma'asa, he saw the act, v'nizka halocha, and he remembered the halocha. But Moshe Rabbeinu, they were all seeing the act. So if he didn't remind them, and they'd all talked about the halacha for the act anyway, just a few moments, one pasuk before. The pasuk itself does not say what he saw. Vayar always means, vayar means seeing through. Seeing, right, is what we call chochum einov baroisha. What is the ezu chochum? Haraya es hanoilot. Somebody who looks ahead and sees the outcome. Pinchas sees through the maaser and he sees the outcome and he is able to assess the damage that is being done by these people who are deliberately. They are deliberately, not just, they haven't gone off to commit Avodah Zorah quietly away from Am Yisrael. We don't follow, they're being provocatively demonstrative. We don't follow people around with spears. And that's why Halacha Hiva Ein Moirin came. Somebody goes off, yes, and they commit Avodah Zorah on their own. And the Halacha is, however incensed you are by it, you don't follow them around with a spear. But when they come, and they stand in Kahal Yisrael, in the middle of the Kehila Kadosha, and they choose to provoke, knowing that this has been proclaimed as a death sentence, which, as all death sentences in Jewish law, is voluntary. By which I mean, you can say, I haven't been warned, you can say, right, any Aveira that's committed in private doesn't get the death penalty because there's no hasra, there's no warning from two kosher edim. So there's no difficulty in avoiding it, but they choose to say, go on, then what are you going to do? You're going to kill me? Well, in that case, they do get killed. Now. No, I don't like that because the Hema Boichim, they're crying because, and this is what the Gemara says, the Rashi brings the Gemara, because they don't know what to do. This isn't shock. They've got over the shock and they're asking us, how do we react? They don't know. Yeah, so this isn't shock. It's Moshe Rabbein. Moshe Rabbein is being in some pretty tricky situations. So that is part number two of the story. It's not as vast as it was when he broke the Luchos. That was also quite vast, I remind you, right? He knows what to do. Now, part three, Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Pinchas. Which Pinchas? Pinchas ben Eloz ben Aaron HaKohen. Well, we've just been told that a second ago. And the Rabban Shlomo knows, right, he knows which Pinchas it is. It's an absolute restart. It's a deliberate restart, as if you're telling a whole new story, right? Dramatically, it's a very obvious, it's very obvious way of showing the whole thing is starting again. Heishu is chamosi me'al b'nei Yisrael, v'kanei es kinosi b'soichom, V'loi chilisies b'nei Yisro b'kinosi, lochein emoer, hinani naisin loi esbrisi sholem. Pinchas knew when to stand up and defend my honor and by aggression, and therefore, and this is a little similar to what I just said last time we spoke about this, I think last year, but you'll see, you can see it's not exactly the same. Therefore, he now needs a bris of shalom, because what I want to be sure about is that he will realize that was the moment for aggression. Now, moving forward, we go back to shalom. Part three, which gets Pinchas named the parsha, is knowing when to be aggressive. You know what, the truth is, that's already quite human. We can all be provoked, and right, you're provoking me. The bris, the covenant, the what shows me the connection between Pinchas and the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is being able to climb down instantly. That's over, it's done. I had to show anger for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not for me. And now I go back to shalom is what counts. Now, that's why Parshas Pinchas is called Parshas Pinchas, Hinen Enos and Lois Bris Yishalayim, celebrating the fact that he returns to being, he doesn't get the taste for blood, Chas v'Shalom. This is not a pack of hounds, this is an Ish Kodesh. And on the contrary, he will do what's required whenever it's required, but his permanent relationship with the Rabbeinu Shalom is Es Bris Yishalayim. And I think, again, that goes right back to something that we said very early on. So I said, I don't think it took us a long way from the parasha. We don't want to show people what you do and don't do. You do sue, you don't sue, you do wash, you don't wash, you do say Kaddish, you don't say Kaddish, you do Avamin, you don't. That's not what we're interested in. We're interested in Vayar. We're interested in creating children and people who look, assess the situation, deviate from the norm of behavior when it is required for a reason, and don't let go of that reason, and therefore they're able to return to the norm. If you don't have the core, if you don't know why we're saying Kaddish, why we're not washing, why we're doing it, then you can't return to a norm because you've got no norm. Norm means the values that the norm is based on. And here, we want that here Pinchas gets a bracha of knowing when to depart from the norm for specific reasons, but that the norm, the bris of Shalom, the long-term relationship between him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu of Shalom, is what the relationship between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is based on. People shouting the odds and getting worked up and getting excited is not the basis of our relationship with the Rabbeinu Shalom. So when we are in a time of year where we are thinking back the values, and we are thinking it is a time when we've had battles through the centuries and through the generations, a time of battle, and in times of battle we get desensitized to violence because we're having to battle. Therefore, it's at this time of year that we have to remind ourselves of the core, the Hashem Hashem Keil Rachum, Chanun, Erech Apayim, Rav Chesed, Ve'emes, these core values and principles which are the basis of our relation to the Rabbeinu Shalom, and not the things that we sometimes have to do coming out of that norm for specific purposes. Adkar.